Yeah, I would say the niche is super important, and also just your ability to execute and actually create content that people want to read and get it in front of people, and the typical marketing expertise. You can't just write good content and hope for the best.
Hello and welcome to BrandTuned, the only podcast on branding that includes fundamentals like copyright, trademarks, and IP that are core to creating and owning a brand that's unique to you. I'm Shireen Smith, lawyer, brand strategist, and curious business owner, keen to discover the secrets of effective brand building. Today, my guest is Dominic Wells, the founder of OnFolio. He helps his clients to invest in websites, buying and building content websites. Welcome to the BrandTuned podcast, Dominic. Hello, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Great. I'm really intrigued what your business does. Can you tell us a bit more about it, how you came to do this work?
Yeah. I originally just started out myself as what a lot of people refer to as an affiliate marketer. So I learned how to build content websites myself, how to get them to rank highly in Google through SEO, and then how to basically monetize those content sites. And I did that for a few years. And I also had a service business where we helped other people start sites from scratch. And then as my audience grew, people were aware that I was also actively buying websites and investing in, like, there are marketplaces out there for people who want to sell profitable content websites, just like there are marketplaces to sell many different types of businesses. And I was actively buying some rather than just starting from scratch. And members of my audience expressed an interest in doing the same. And some of the conversations were along the lines of, well, I'll put up the money if you help me buy a business and then run it for me. And that gave me the idea to launch it as a service and then to launch it as a completely separate service under a new brand.
Okay, so what is a content website and why would you want one?
The easiest way to understand it is probably just to think of a blog. But whereas nowadays when you think of a blog, you really think of someone just kind of writing a diary online, whereas the way they've evolved into content websites, it's really, a lot of the time they're quite niche and they focus on one particular topic. So, for example, there could be someone has a content site about fishing and they write reviews of different fishing equipment. Maybe they have some how-to guides. So some of them are essentially like online versions of magazines or like hobby blogs, things like that. But some of them can be very lucrative. If you imagine like weight loss ones or recipe websites, sports ones, and they can be monetized through people having display advertising on the website or through affiliate commissions, such as maybe going back to the fishing example, someone wants to know where to buy the best fishing equipment. And so you refer them to Amazon or some other equipment manufacturers, and then those places will give you a commission for any sales you drive. You can also create your own info products. Like you could maybe create a video course or an ebook about how to be a better fisherman and sell that.
Okay, I get it. So would it usually be ranking quite well on Google?
Yeah, and that's part of the reason people buy existing ones rather than start from scratch, because the hardest part about a content website is getting it to rank highly in Google in the first place. And so if you just go out and buy one that's already ranking and it's already making money, then it's the hard part is done for you.
Right. Roughly how much are people spending on these sites to buy one?
Anything from a few hundred dollars to millions.
Really?
So, yeah. They're priced generally on a multiple of the profit. And so the market range varies, but it's generally 2.5 to 3.5 times yearly profit. So if there's a website that was making around $30,000 or pounds a month, then it would be valued at around $1 million. Then obviously if there's a brand new one that's only making a little bit of money, the price will be a lot less.
I see. That explains some of these books and articles I've come across about blogging being really profitable if you focus on a niche. So it's for people to develop their own content sites out of their interest. Do you teach people to do that?
I used to do that. That was my previous business, which was called Human Proof Designs. And I taught people how to start from scratch. And we also, some of the services we did gave people a head start. So we would build like the kind of basic website for them on the topic of their choice. And then they would take it and run with it and add more content and so on. And that was where my audience came from, who said, well, we actually don't want to start from scratch. We want to buy existing ones, and we can see that there's marketplaces and there's websites for sale for $100,000 or even more, and we have the budget, but we have no idea how to tell which ones are good and which ones are bad and how to run them profitably. And that's kind of where I came in, and I already had my experience with a previous service business. So seemed like a no-brainer.
So what's your background? How did you come into all this?
I studied film at university, and so not the most obvious path into this. And then when I graduated, I moved to Taiwan for a couple of years, which that's what I thought at the time, just to teach English. So kind of the typical just graduated, don't want to get a real job yet, go abroad type thing. And after a couple of years, it was now 2008. And so the world was not doing great at that time, and similar to now, I guess. And so I decided, well, I already have a job, I'll stay in Taiwan and come back to the UK later. And while I was sort of staying there, I decided I actually wanted to stay longer, but I didn't want to teach English anymore. And basically my option was to look online, because I didn't speak fluent Mandarin, so I couldn't get a local job, and they don't pay that well in Taiwan anyway. So I was like, okay, I can use the internet and try and figure out how to make money. And so I stumbled across those books and blogs that you referenced earlier that teach you how to do it. And so I just started up some niche websites and sort of kept failing until I got a little bit of traction. And this was in 2012 I first started, and so it's been over 8 years. And so it's definitely a kind of keep trying and keep failing until you succeed story.
I guess it must have been a little bit easier back then. Everything's getting harder. Just getting attention is getting harder nowadays. And blogging especially, you know, podcasting gets a lot more visibility than blogging, whereas before blogs used to really capture people's attention in a way that they don't anymore. Have you found a decline in sort of interest in websites or not?
No, but I would agree with you that it's harder, and that podcasting definitely is a growing medium, and video like YouTube, for example, is growing. But even though websites are, it's a lot harder to rank number one in Google now, there's still proportionally more people using the internet every day. And so, and people are becoming more and more attuned to or accustomed to just pulling out their phone and searching for something. And so there's always the two things kind of offset. And I would say, and actually there's a lot more sort of knowledge being shared from people who have already pioneered things and then are passing down what they've learned. And so it is harder, but it's also easier because there's a lot more things that you can do and a lot more instruction that exists.
So provided you've got a good niche, then that seems to be what works, as long as there's interest in what you're putting out there.
Yeah, I would say the niche is super important, and also just your ability to execute and actually create content that people want to read and get it in front of people, and like the typical marketing expertise. You can't just write good content and hope for the best, but also you can't be really good at marketing garbage content. So
a short break now to thank our sponsors, As Rights International, who provide trademark registration, copyright services, and more. Download a copy of its 7 costly mistakes with your business and brand and find out how to create an effective brand. Details are in the show notes. So when did you start your current business?
I think it was, yeah, it was about just coming up for 2 years ago. I think November 2018 was when I bought the domain name.
Were there any challenges at the beginning, or did you naturally move into that through understanding that this was a good space to be in?
Yeah, it was definitely one of the easiest businesses I've ever started, because it was kind of born out of a demand of my existing audience. And so I actually had this idea in 2014. And I remember saying to my wife, I think it would be a good business, but I'm just some guy in Taiwan with no track record and no expertise and no social proof and all of those things. And so I was like, yeah, maybe one day. And I put the idea on the back burner and completely forgot about it. And then when I started in 2018 or 19, or early 2019, when I was starting to get traction, I thought to myself, hey, wait a second, I had this idea before, but actually now I was relatively well known because I was a how to make money online blogger. And so I had an audience, and I had social proof from other people in the space who had audiences and could vouch for me. And so it was actually quite easy to get people to want to work with me. So it's kind of like not like catching lightning in a bottle, but it definitely was a case of I offered something that people wanted because I was able to spot the opportunity.
What was your experience of creating the brand? How did you come up with the name?
I remember I was talking with one of my team members who was kind of going to be like working on the company with me from my other company. And we were going down thinking about something to do with being like a website operator. And so we were trying to come up with clever names that would indicate that we were good at operations. And so we were just basically looking on GoDaddy or Namecheap and seeing what domain names were available. And so it was the things like trying, like, oh, how about smoothoperator.com? Okay, that's gone. Okay, how about web operator? And then, oh no, that's too boring. And and then we kind of went down the path of, well, what about something to do with like web portfolio? And so I think we tried Webfolio, and that business already existed. And one of my friends and my team member said, well, how about Onfolio? And I was like, okay, that kind of works. And the .com was taken, but we went to, I visited it, and there was no existing website there. And so it was just like being domain squatted. And so I was like, okay, well, the .co is available, so why don't we try that? And in hindsight, I probably should have researched a little bit better, because onfolio.com is owned by Microsoft, and it was the name of a project that they had. I think they started in 2000 and then they shut it down in 2007. So it was long ago, and the trademark had already expired and everything, but it would have been a lot easier to start a brand name that, where someone wasn't sitting on the .com with no intention to sell it. So I guess I got lucky, because it could have been, you know, encroaching on a Microsoft trademark. We'd have had to have picked a different name. But the trademark expired, I think, in 2012. And so
it wasn't renewed.
And they didn't renew it. They'd already shut down the business. And it was some kind of app for organizing like photos or digital assets. They basically just stopped using it. And so really, yeah, it was just a case of trying to come up with a name that would convey what we were doing, but not sounding too cheesy and or too boring. There's a lot of names in the space as well that are they have Fox or HQ or Ninja or something in the name, and so we were trying to avoid something generic like that. And Onfolio, I think we let it marinate in our minds for a few days and then went for it.
Does it mean anything in terms of what you do?
Well, it just, it's kind of like online portfolio. So it's for helping people build a portfolio or run a portfolio.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a good idea to have something a little bit more distinctive and not so generic, because I've seen people end up seeing competitors use similar names but just with a different suffix, because they've been successful. You know, so when you've got a totally generic name, there's nothing you can do if somebody else starts up with .co.uk or whatever.
Yeah, well, my previous business was called Human Proof Designs, because I can't really remember exactly how I came up with that name, and I ended up hating it because I felt it was too long, it was too wordy, it kind of was weird, and the story was like, well, we make websites that are not just about pleasing Google, but humans would enjoy them, so that was kind of the logic behind it. But I think in the end, it benefited us because it was so distinctive. Everybody knew what it was. And I got round the wordiness by just training my audience to just use the anagram, the abbreviation HPD. And that was what I did with that one. Whereas with Onfolio, I wanted something shorter and a little bit snazzier, but without just seeming like we were trying to be too clever.
How about the meaning of the brand? Did you go down that route of trying to work out why you're doing this business and what your values are? Or did you just sort of look at visual identity? How did you go about that?
Yeah, we never really went down that path, because I kind of launched it in a very MVP fashion. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think I only made a sales page for our core service after about 12 months, because I was just testing the demand. And I just had like a generic contact form on the page, which was, we're thinking about launching this service. If you're interested, let me know. And after about 9 or 10 months, I thought, hey, we're getting quite successful, maybe I should build out the sales page. And then I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't, because maybe it's clearly working. And so because of that, when we first launched, I didn't put much thought into designing the brand or the message, because I just thought, well, I've got this idea, who's interested? And that was kind of how we were like, let's just put it out there and see what happens.
Sure. And do you have a logo now or not?
We do, yeah. I think I got a logo designed last May, 2019. Mm-hmm. So that was about 6 or 7 months into the existence of the company.
So how do people work with you? Do you have Facebook groups? I mean, how do they find out about you? And then what do you do for them? Do you have different services? Presumably you don't work one-to-one with each person.
No, I mean, I have a team. So someone on the team would be working with the client. Mm-hmm. But most people find me either because I've been on a podcast like this one or because I'm already known in the space. And people might go to one of those marketplaces and say, I want to buy one of these websites, but I don't know how to run it. Do you know anyone that could run it for me? And most of them would refer that person to me. There's a few others like me in the space, so they wouldn't just say, go work with Dom, but they would say, check out these two or three people that, you know, we can vouch for them. And then that's really it. Yeah, we don't do a lot of SEO for, it's kind of ironic, we do SEO for all the websites that we run, but we don't do it for our own website because it's very much a word of mouth and podcast.
So you help look after the sites and that's it for people who've gone and bought a site, or are you helping them to keep the content refreshed and do you write the content?
Yeah, I mean, we're basically doing everything that we would do if it was our own website and we wanted to grow it. Uh-huh. So someone will come to us and say they want to buy a website, they have the budget, and we'll go out and find one. And some people are niche agnostic, they just want something that makes money, and other people, they have an interest and so they want to buy something in that, or they already have another website and they want to get one kind of strategically aligned, and then we'll do the due diligence on the business, make sure the seller's not a scammer and make sure the business is sort of less risky than other businesses. And then after we help them buy it, and we make sure that it gets transferred to them and everything, then we'll go out and do everything that is required, which could be, yeah, adding more content, doing some search engine optimization, doing some social media marketing. It really depends on the particular business, what is going to move the needle. But the idea is we do everything that's needed.
And what do the owners then do with it? They're affiliate marketers, are they?
Well, they don't really have to do anything because we're doing it for them.
So it's pure passive income for them?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's not completely passive because we speak to them about the direction of the site, and some people want to be a little bit more involved. But yeah, it can be passive. So essentially what we're doing is turning an active investment into a passive investment for them.
That's interesting. So that's your process then. You take care of the website. Do you do ads to help them to sell on the website?
Yeah, I mean, usually the person who built the website would have set all of that up first and then got it profitable and then for whatever reason decided to sell. And so we usually just see what they've done that works and then double down on it if we can, or we have better ideas, or we want to add additional monetization streams to the site or something like that. Just for us, it's like marketing 101.
Okay. So what sort of people own these sites or sell them?
People who work with us, it's typically a lot of real estate investors so they're kind of from the investing background and they want to get higher yields. They don't want to just make 4% or whatever real estate gives them, or just high net worth individuals in general. People who build them are more people like I was when I first started. So maybe not, they don't want to get a job, or they're interested in search engine optimization and affiliate marketing, and maybe they or they already have a job but they hate it and so they want to try and quit. And so usually it's younger people, like probably in their 20s or 30s. And the reason they sell is because it can often be a pretty big windfall. If they they've got a website making, let's say, $5,000 a month, and they can sell it for around $150,000, that's a big chunk of money. So a lot of them, they're like, okay, now's probably a good time for me to take some cash off the table.
So what sort of return do people get on their investment if they're buying it for $150,000?
I'd say in the mid to high 20s, so 25%, something like that.
So it was paying its way $5,000 and then they've got to pay you to run it and things, and it still works for them. It still yields enough to be worth doing.
Yeah, exactly. So even after our fees, it's still a pretty good investment compared to a lot of the other opportunities.
Given that you're an internet business, I'm just wondering, which brand do you particularly admire and why?
Yeah, it's funny because I was looking at this question and for some reason a brand that popped into my head was completely unrelated to internet. So I can give an internet one as well later if needed, but one I really always liked was Innocent Smoothies. And the reason I was thinking about this was because someone was trying to come up with, they were trying to get advice on a, I think they were launching like a kind of pure coffee brand, and it reminded me of Innocent. And why I liked them was because the brand name, they didn't really need a message along with the brand name. I just felt like the name Innocent tells you everything you need to know. It's not like Dave Smoothies and then the slogan has to explain that they're like preservative free and everything. And I also liked them because so I used to work in Waitrose before I left and went to Taiwan, and at Christmas time Innocent used to put chocolate coins in the packaging for the shelf stackers, and they'd say, without you guys we wouldn't get our product on the shelf, so you know, have a good Christmas. And it was really nice, and so
nice gesture,
it was
yeah.
It was like no one else would even think about the shelf stackers, and I don't think that's, you know, it's just you wouldn't think about it, you'd think about the customers buying it. And so I really liked their messaging and just the whole brand identity that they had built.
Yeah, good choice. Well, thank you very much, Dominic, for appearing on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you've listened to the podcast to this point, please do like, share, or rate it. If you have an important message to share that would be relevant to listeners, then do connect with me and let me know. You can find me on most platforms, but perhaps the best one to use is LinkedIn.